This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Rogers, you pointed out a few minutes ago that wind does make it seem colder, doggone it.
Yeah.
When we get the strong wind like we had at times this week. Did you see that video clip from out in Wyoming of the semi-truck being blown over?
Yes. It just, I don't know, I couldn't see if it got that car that was next to it.
The back end
of the truck got the car.
Yeah, I mean, it rolled right over on top of the squad car, and no one was hurt.
Amazing.
I don't know if the officer was in the car or not, but you can see this big old semi rumbling down through there. You know, it is also a reminder of our Illinois law that has been expanded, and a lot of people don't realize it, that if there's any emergency vehicle on the side, I mean, or any vehicle with four-way flashers on, you've got to get over, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
or slow down dramatically.
No matter what, whatever it is, you have to get out of their way and slow down. You have to move to the side of the road, if it at all possible. Now, I've seen some four-lane roads where there's not much of a median, where it's and crowded during rush hour, and it's difficult for cars to get by because there's always one or two that just want to move ahead and don't care and to mess things up.
But you have to slow down. You must slow down.
You must slow down. Yeah.
And I just this week, I was on I-88, and I mean, it was very obvious there were flashing lights ahead. Mm-hmm. You know, there were some of those barrier trucks with the big cushions on the back.
Oh, right.
In case somebody plows into the back of them. And, you know, this guy didn't get over. And in fact, to compound the problem, he was talking on his telephone as he zipped along in that lane. Yeah.
Well, those blowing winds, every time I see that or hear about it, I think about how many times they close the expressway in Indiana.
All right.
Yeah,
trailer
going across.
Bands,
right.
Sometimes, by all means. Right. Well, have a good morning. I'll tell you what.
We'll talk to you again
about 5:30. How's
that? Sounds good.
All right. Appreciate it, sir. Roger Battish, on duty in the newsroom. And news breaks out, we break in if we need to. You know, you don't get this kind of stuff really, you know, from most of your apps, just so you know. I mean, this is right here and now AM radio. And if you're listening, maybe some of you are listening to us way out of Chicago this morning. I'm one of those who really enjoys listening to the skywave of AM radio. I'll tune across the band. And this great signal, of course, is audible in many, many states, especially this time of day. So if you're listening to us out there, thank you for doing so. And some of you follow us in other ways. We do tweet quite often, as a matter of fact. One story I tweeted this week was about farmland values, and I'll talk about that coming up momentarily. The latest report from the Chicago Federal Reserve Bank showed yet another year of declining farmland values, the third consecutive year in the region served by the bank down here on LaSalle Street. Tell you what, Big O is out there somewhere. His schedule is, you know what, somebody asked me this week, is Orion still speaking a lot? I honestly believe that he is speaking more now than he was 3 or 4 years ago. He has been very active out there at the meetings, and people enjoy hearing him. And he certainly enjoys meeting them and listening to them. Anyway, let's get a report from Big O. Where are you there, young man?
Good morning, Max. From South Carolina, the city of Greenville, South Carolina, not too far from the Atlantic Ocean. And I must say, one of the few cities in North America I've not had the opportunity to visit before. But this year, the National Outstanding Young Farmer Awards Program is being held here in South Carolina. And those former Outstanding Young Farmers, now part of the fraternity, and this year's class of 10 finalists that, as of tonight, will be singled down to just 4 finalists, this is where we're holding this year's Congress. South Carolina. Total agricultural sales in 2007, $2.4 billion. and there are over 12 million acres of forest land throughout South Carolina, 74% of that privately owned. Agriculture, well, they are home to the only tea farm in North America, which I did not know. Forests cover two-thirds of the total land area. And specialty crops include exotic mushrooms, ginkgo, and pecans. A little bit of the background. The Ag Commissioner shared that yesterday with those people who are here for this event. Hugh Weathers has been serving as South Carolina's Commissioner of Agriculture since September of 2004. But now, we started out with quite a few applications, narrowed it down to 25, narrowed it down to 10, and the 10 invited here as guests of the major sponsor, John Deere. So the class of 2017, and from this list, four will be named National Outstanding Young Farmers of the past year. From Arkansas, Kevin and Rebecca Hicks. From Georgia, Ben and Julie Ann Boyd. From Illinois, Chad and Deb Bremer. From Minnesota, Aaron and Jessica Rademacher. Mississippi, Brad and Molly Judson. New Jersey, Tor and Nicole Anderson. North Carolina, Jarman and Nancy Sullivan. North Dakota, Matt and Stacy Swenson. South Carolina, the host state, Dean and Sarah Hutto. And from Wisconsin, Mark and Angie Almas. And when I ring down the gavel on tonight's banquet, we'll know what four have been named the National Outstanding Young Farmers for the year 2017. We certainly enjoy being involved in this over the past years. I know, Max, you were able to do it when I was having a couple of valves replaced in my heart a couple of years ago. But it's good to be back and good to say hello to a lot of friends. Quite an impressive lineup of former outstanding young farmers. So by tonight, we'll know. And on Monday, I'll have the stories of the four National Outstanding Young Farmers. That's my report from South Carolina. Max, back to you.
And he's sticking to it. Yes, thank you, Big O. Appreciate it. Yeah, I bet he went down there to get some warmth because it's going to be in the 70s down there today, I think, maybe even close to 80 degrees in that part of the world. So he was probably trying to get just a little bit of warmth. We were together in the studio this week, our television studio, for This Week in Agribusiness, and we talked with Dale Moore, who is one of the Washington lobbyists for the American Farm Bureau Federation. Many of the farm organizations have their governmental affairs departments, as do other associations. That's one thing you realize when you go to Washington and you go up on Capitol Hill, especially this time of year when there's so much going on in Congress. You'll run into realtors. You'll run into car dealers. You'll run into teachers. Oh, they take over the town to go out there and, that's right, lobby, as we all have the right to do. And well, one of those groups that does that is the American Farm Bureau Federation. And a Big O and I talked with one of their representatives just this week, as a matter of fact.
Dale Moore will be doing a lot of work on that farm bill and other policymakers on behalf of the American Farm Bureau Federation. And is it true that we are really underway on the 2018 farm bill, Dale?
Orion, I think you're absolutely on spot there. We are already hearing that Senate Ag Committee Chairman Pat Roberts has a hearing scheduled in Manhattan, Kansas, coming up here in a couple of weeks. We know that Chairman Conaway has been talking about it on his side of the Hill. There's a lot of backroom discussions going on. So absolutely, the 2018 Farm Bill, now its sweepstakes, is now underway.
If you had to pick the stickiest point in the Farm Bill, what would it be in your opinion?
Well, I think, number one, we are all watching intently is what's going to happen with the budget process. As you know from the farm bills that you and Max have watched over the years, the budget is the driver. The budget's going to set the stage. And so one of the things that we're working on already in a coalition effort working with the House and Senate Ag Committees is to make sure that we've got a good, solid budget to work with and protect it against any cuts before we get those final decisions made on what the outcome of the next farm bill will be.
Is agriculture still one of the segments on Capitol Hill where there is bipartisan support?
I would say for the most part, yes. Obviously, we have our tussles now and then over certain issues, a few battles that rage here and there, particularly in the back room. But I got to tell you, agriculture still is more about working together, both sides of the political aisle, coming up with a plan that, that they can put a bipartisan face on whatever comes out of the House Ag Committee, the Senate Ag Committee. And it's up to all of us in the agricultural family, from the boots on the ground, farmers and ranchers, to our industry sector partners, to make sure that we are working together and hanging together to defend against those from the far right and the far left that want to undo both the safety net, risk management provisions, and other aspects of the Farm Bill.
Dale, last time around, there was a lot of talk about separating out those nutrition programs from the rest of the agriculture budget. Will that surface again? And if so, what will Farm Bureau's reaction be?
Well, it's an even money bet. It is going to surface again. Again, we've got folks, I think, particularly on the right side, far right side of the issue, that are going to go after the nutrition programs. I think our fear, our concern, maybe a better way to put it, is that they want to split those up, not only because that some want to go after the nutrition programs, but some of those same folks, including some on the far left, want to go after the farm programs themselves. Farm Bureau's policy is that we need to keep the Farm Bill intact. There is a connection between both the nutrition programs that help those who are in need and the farm programs that provide the safety net and risk management tools. We're all going to be working together to hold that together, and we're looking for that, you know, having that opportunity to express those concerns and those that support when the Farm Bill process really kicks into full gear.
We know your members will be engaged in the process. They always are. Dale, thanks for the time. It's good to visit with you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate your leadership in keeping farm and ag at the top of everybody's mind.
Dale Moore is in the Washington office of the American Farm Bureau Federation. The organization used to be headquartered in Chicago for many, many years, actually in Park Ridge, along Toohey Avenue, but so much more of their work involved Washington, so the immediate past president, Bob Stallman, I believe, is the one who moved the office to the nation's capital. I'll have occasion to be out there a couple of times this year in Washington, maybe a little bit more than usual, as president of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting. We have an event out there coming up later in the spring, whereby, again, we'll be inviting in some lawmakers, some representatives of the Department of Agriculture and other agencies, too, that interact with the agriculture industry. We'll get an update on dairying. We'll talk about beef. Oh, my goodness. We'll talk about climbing wheat and corn prices. The corn market came to life this week. We'll cover that and more coming up here on the Saturday Morning Show from WGN Radio. 22 minutes past 5 on the Saturday Morning Show from WGN Radio. Max Armstrong with you this morning. And ahead of a day that should be okay. It's about what you expect for the weather of the Chicago Auto Show, actually. You know, there have been years when we've had a lot of snow piled around during the auto show. And that really drives folks inside to see all of the new things coming out of the auto industry. Well, what was it? I saw about the Expedition this week. They are redesigning. It's a major redesign of the Ford Expedition. First redesign, really, in 15 years. It's going to be a little longer. It's going to be a little bit lighter, as I understand. And, yeah, the Sport Utes. We love our Sport Utes until the fuel price climbs again. And then, uh-oh. You know, if Detroit could just anticipate every time we get a spike in the energy price, then they could ratchet up the production of the small cars. And then if they could anticipate whenever we're going to fall down to $40, $50 crude again, then they could start cranking out the less fuel-efficient Sport Utes. Well, maybe someday they won't have to respond to those gyrations. Maybe we'll figure out a way to not have to worry about that quite as much. The beef industry, how are those folks doing these days? Well, I talked about it the other day, but an economist who keeps a close eye on what's happening, and not only in the beef industry, but all of the meats. David Williams is his name. He's with Informa Economics, and he gave me this assessment.
It looks a little bit dim for the moment. Just a lot has to do with the placement numbers are out there. There's a lot of cattle on feed, They're coming at us here in the June timeframe, so we're continuing to watch that. And you know, then we're also watching the beef demand in comparison to the other proteins on the chicken and the pork side. So we think that that could be something that we really have to watch through the spring as we have those competing meats out there.
What was the reason the placements were so high? Can you give us some of the background on that?
Well, we have a couple factors. I think a couple of things are the herd continues to expand, and you know, it's still profitable to continue to have those cow-calf. Also, we had a great grass season last year. We had lots of grass all the way through the Midwest, Texas. We had great rains, so people are continuing to expand their herds. Then we also have you know, the cheaper grains. We think that the corn and the beans you know, will continue to go downward. So people are looking at that, saying, "Hey, that's a cheap cattle feeding."
In terms of the demand side, as far as the domestic demand is concerned, it has been reasonably good, has it not?
It has. It is keeping up, but there's still some little bit of weakness in there.
Where are we seeing that for the most part?
We're seeing that in our trim and our ground beef sales. You know, the prices have stayed up there in the higher range, and they haven't really come down, so the consumer has some alternative choices, and that's been a drag on the cutout for the moment.
How worrisome is all of the discussion about trade and the new president cutting the legs off the Trans-Pacific Partnership, wanting to renegotiate the North American Free Trade Agreement? What occurs to me is how many years it's taken to build up this international trade in beef and pork.
Yeah, we think that that's one of the biggest issues out there that we could see is if we were to lose Mexico as our partner for the beef industry, that could be very detrimental into our price of our cutout. Futures, everything would be affected on that.
That hasn't been priced into the futures market, has it, David?
No, it has not. So today, there might be a little bit that's out there as a precautionary, but it's very, very limited. So it's not out there yet.
Is there some feeling among the trade that that market would still be there, that meat in the diet of the Mexican people, beef and pork, is so vital that we still wouldn't see our exports south of the border restricted that much? What's the sentiment among the trade that you sense in that regard?
Well, like I said, they would be able to get alternatives. They would, you know, either get product from another country, or they would be able to switch to a different protein if there was a trade war with Mexico. But we definitely don't want to lose them as a partner, and that's something that we need to be continue to stand up and voice our opinion on that the cattle industry needs Mexico as a partner.
That's David Williams. He's one of the economists at Informa, keeping an eye on the meat situation. We were in a very busy location there. Maybe you could tell. We were on the floor of the trade show at the cattle industry convention just a few days ago. I was in the Beef Magazine booth, where we had the opportunity to sign some copies of Stories from the Heartland, and really, really enjoyed visiting with cattlemen and women from all over the United States. And when you're with those folks, you realize how remote some of those ranches are. I visited with a woman from Nevada. The closest city for her is Elko. The closest city, I said. What is Elko? 10,000 people, maybe? And they're an hour from Elko. And this woman told me that her kids ride the school bus an hour and a half each way, each day. Now think about that. 3 hours on the school bus every day. As she said, we have to make every moment count when they are at school. And I think she said her son and daughter get up something like 4:30 in the morning to get ready for school each day to prepare for that trip to get all the way into. And how do you handle school activities? Do you? There were so many questions I wanted to ask her about life on the ranch way out there, northeast Nevada, where they produce beef for not just America, but for the entire world. Of course, beef exports have become more important in recent years, just as David Williams was talking with me there. We'll share a little bit of a visit coming up in a few minutes, too, from the immediate past president of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, Tracy Bruner. Just stepped down for that role. An update of the headlines coming up here. We were talking a little bit earlier about all that wind in Wyoming. Mm-hmm. Did you see how much snow they've been getting out there in the mountains?
Tremendous amount.
I think I got this from our colleague Aubrey Mumpower this week.
Have you seen the pictures of him skiing out there?
Jackson, they in fact closed the resort at Jackson Hole because of too much snow.
Yeah.
I haven't heard when they're going to reopen, but when I saw the initial story on that, they weren't going to reopen until Monday. But they've had 400-plus inches of snow out there.
That's something. And then California got a ton of precipitation, basically replenishing everything from the drought for the past several years.
I was visiting this week with a farm broadcaster out there, Sabrina Hill, who was heard on the radio in California covering the agriculture scene, and she said the drought isn't over, but all of this rain has made a big, big difference. And, of course, of the snow that gets dumped into the mountains is crucial to the farmers because that runs off, coming down the mountains, it runs off into the irrigation ditches and reservoirs, and that becomes the source of valuable irrigation water for the crops out there. Yeah. So, it's good news.
Keep your fingers crossed for good crops this year out there.
We'll see you later, sir.
Thank you, sir. Have a great one.
Thank you. You too. Roger Badish in the newsroom here on WGN Radio's Saturday morning show, where you hear from Big O every Saturday morning on Samuelson Says, sponsored by Wink Products.
It's that time of year again, time to tackle some difficult tasks like cleaning those appliances. And you don't want to forget your most treasured appliance, the coffee maker. Wink Products Coffee Maker Cleaner is the perfect cleaning solution to remove those nasty mineral deposits that make coffee taste metallic and cause your coffee maker to clog. So pick up Wink Coffee Maker Cleaner today and see what a difference it makes. Learn more at WHINK.com. About 3 weeks ago, I shared a letter from a concerned grandmother who had taken her preteen grandsons to a farm where they actually show calves being born, pig litters arriving on the planet, and a well-done educational effort by Fair Oaks Farm in Indiana to help people understand. And she wanted answers from me. I, in turn, turned to you and asked for some suggestions for you, and boy, did you respond. Wish I had time to quote all of them, but just a few. From a farm wife in northern Illinois, the cows are milked 3 times a day in order for them to be on a regular routine, which allows their bodies to adjust to a dependable schedule. Advanced machinery, pesticides, herbicides, GMOs make it possible to feed you and your family and people all over the world because of the advanced technology. Would you like to not be able to use your modern kitchen equipment, your computer, your automobile, your cell phone? It would be like turning back the calendar 100 years. And then I heard from another one of you, talking about artificial insemination. The use of artificial insemination has been around for years. It allows the farmer to improve the genetics of the cow more efficiently. There also is a safety issue in place, being that full-grown dairy bulls get aggressive and dangerous. Too many farmers and employees have been mauled or killed by overly aggressive dairy bulls. And then this one. Is it morally right to confine your pets singularly in an apartment or fishbowl because they provide comfort and joy to humans? Should we be allowed to deny them access to members of their own species? Should we neuter them and deny them the pleasure of motherhood? Are we right to feed them food from a can, not allowing them to enjoy more natural feast of a bird or a rabbit? Oh, this is just the top of the stack. I wish I could share them all, but I do want to say this. You came up with some great suggestions, some great ideas, and I hope you'll take those ideas and spread them around your neighborhood. My thoughts on Samuelson Says.
All right, Big O, thank you much. Appreciate it. Yeah, farmers are communicating. They are sharing their story, and younger producers especially are doing so through various means, such as Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. That's one thing that I really enjoy. During the planting season coming up, I'll be able to see what farmers are doing out there. I'll be able to watch them in the field because there will be many of them who will be showing it via the social media. Some will fly the drone and shoot some video over the corn planter out there. That'll be fun to watch all that they're doing out in the farm fields. Well, the beef industry is, they sprang back some. Those market prices did from the depths of back in 2016. I talked about it with Tracy Bruner when we sat the other day at the Cattlemen's Convention. Tracy is the cattleman from out in Kansas who was president of the association over the past year. I said, give me an update. As you see it, Tracy, what's the lay of the land right now for the beef cattle producers?
Well, you know, Max, American beef producers continue to be the most optimistic and resilient of any agricultural producers on the globe. You know, we have been through a difficult time in the past couple of years. We've had declining prices and real challenges for the American beef industry. But I find nothing but optimism and forward-looking thinking for the American beef producers and American beef industry.
There's a lot of protein on the plate, and we see it coming down the road over the next few months, and your industry continues to work to find a home for it.
Well, we are. You know, the overview of the U.S. beef industry is we continue to be financially strong. We have favorable conditions from Mother Nature, and we're in a growth period in the cattle and beef industry, where we have expanding cattle numbers and growing supplies of beef here in the United States. So we're looking for expanding markets. You know, we can't eat all of that beef here at home, so we need global market access. We're going to continue to reinforce the importance of expanding markets for these expanding supplies of not only beef, but pork and poultry as well.
You know, looking around here, I see a lot of seasoned veterans of the cattle industry, such as yourself. And encouraging is the fact there are so many younger operators coming in here. It's noticeable when you see them walking the trade show floor, when you're seeing them in the hallways. That's encouraging too, isn't it?
Isn't that wonderful, Max? There's nothing that's more gratifying to me as a older producer and one that's in NCBA leadership to see the participation from the young producers in not only the cattle industry convention, but throughout the beef industry. You know, more and more, Max, I believe that beef and the beef industry is being recognized as for the exceptional potential that it has and opportunity for growth within American agriculture. We have growing commodity supplies and favorable prices for value-adding businesses like beef, and more young producers are recognizing that and choosing to embark on a career in the cattle and beef industry. So anyone who's in attendance at the NCBA trade show and NCBA convention will see the extraordinary participation and the strong leadership that's emerging from this new generation of American beef producers.
Much is being said, of course, about those millennials. They look at things a little bit differently than dad and granddad, and they have a little different approach. Will that fit in the beef industry going forward?
Oh, absolutely. You know, the American beef industry's answer to this new generation of millennial consumers is our own millennial producers. They understand how to use technology, and they're going to use it to the advantage of everyone in the beef industry. So I couldn't be more proud. I couldn't be more excited of our industry's future. You know, the global consumer today demands more responsibility, more transparency, and more trust from the producers of the products that it chooses. And there's no one better positioned to provide those attributes in its products than the American beef industry.
Tracy Bruner, immediate past president of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Well, as you walked around there, not only did you see those fed cattle producers and cow-calf operators, the people who directly produce the beef, but there were dairy men and women there also, as a matter of fact, because, you know, once their cows are not able to produce the milk anymore, their meat gets harvested also. Goes into the hamburger chain for us. And how are those dairy folks doing? Well, we talked about it this week with Ryan Yonkman, who's with a Chicago firm called Rice Dairy. And he made an interesting point about what's happening in the dairy industry. California, of course, is the number one dairy producing state, and they, as Ryan pointed out, are going through some challenges.
Out west and Pacific Northwest is where we've seen a lot of rain and a lot of snow, kind of unseasonal, that we've actually seen really start to affect milk production from the perspective of getting cows sick, which can't go into the milking line, naturally turn into products that we're consuming. On the flip side, it's been a blessing, especially in California where the water table is so low. So it's kind of a love-hate for those guys. But the big picture of dairy, it has tightened supply out, supply up on the West Coast.
Well, let's go to the East Coast, because things are happening in Washington, D.C. that will have an impact. How critical is the dairy part of the Farm Bill? Is that something you're watching?
It's something we're watching. It matters. You know, the new campaign, you know, when we talk to dairies about their risks, walking into this year, the new campaign was one of those things that was really a wild card as to what's going to happen with the Farm Bill, what is the Trump administration going to be doing. And right now we've seen a direct effect happening with Mexico as some of these kind of trade wars almost begin, and has taken a direct effect on our non-fat price, which inevitably has been passed down onto the dairy in a bad way. So we're very aware of it. It's a risk. It's not something we're willing to forecast and say this is what's going to happen, but we have to continue to watch it and be prepared really for the worst. Those conversations start to move toward places like China and other close trade partners like Canada. We just have to be very careful about those things.
Unless we forget that global market that is now so important to the American dairyman is a very competitive one. We have folks in New Zealand who love serving the world with their dairy products.
Yeah, markets continue to grow, and in that comes volatility. Our exports are a big part of what we do now. It's around 15%+ of our products leave this country. So everything that happens in New Zealand, that happens in Europe, matters. Whether supply is going up, supply is going down, or economies are weakening or strengthening. Right now, we're coming out of what we would have called a pretty bearish market for the last 2 years, where supply was strong globally. That is starting to shift. European milk production has now been down for about half a year. New Zealand has been down. So we've seen the supply side starting to tighten up. That has not been the case here in the United States.
You mentioned California and that pressure on the West Coast, but other major milk-producing states, the per-cow output and the number of cows continues to climb, does it not?
Yeah, the Midwest and the Northeast, even the Southwest, we continue to fill the hole that's been created out west, and we've watched our milk production actually grow. Last month, we were up 2.2%. So we're kind of getting bailed out in a way that the rest of the world's making less, which is help our prices sustain and actually move a little higher. But we just keep getting better at what we do in the Midwest and Northeast, and doesn't look like milk production will be turning back anytime soon here in the U.S.
I want to come back to something you said a little bit earlier about the importance of exports to us now. I saw a stat the other day that one out of seven tanker loads of milk leaving the farm in the United States would go into the export channels in some way or another, some dairy product. That's kind of a surprising number, if it's accurate. That's correct, right?
Yeah. Yeah. As we were talking earlier, it matters. Everything that's going on over there, we watch very closely, and we continue to try and grow that market. At the rate we're producing milk, it has to leave our country if we want to be at price levels that are going to put our farmers in positions to continue to make milk here at a profit.
You talked about volatility in the marketplace. Are our producers doing a better job of trying to manage that volatility? Are you working with them, and what are you sharing with them? What are you telling them?
Yeah, so every year, I've been doing this now for 6 years behind the rice dairy desk, we continue to see more and more dairies coming into the market, starting to utilize risk management in some fashion. The government's taken its attempt at trying to provide margin protection program forms of insurance for them. We continue to see those somewhat fail as far as being coverage that's really meaningful to the dairy. It's very, very vague, if you will. So what we've been doing for dairies over the last year, I would say, is looked at this year actually somewhat optimistically. As we saw world milk supply start to decline, demand does continue to grow, populations continue to grow around the world, we started to view this year as one that we hold plenty of risk in, but there's some good things happening. And after a couple of bad years, we want our dairies to be able to have as much upside as possible. So doing insurance structures that protect the floor but getting as much upside as possible is some things we've been looking at for farmers.
Quick question about pizza. Still critically important to the dairy industry?
By all means. Every year that we can read about pizza consumption going up, that's good for us. We want to continue to see that happen. Butter, to flip gears from cheese, is a market we continue to see really, really grow. Different kinds of butter. Butter is good for you now. So there's really been a nice spin on dairy products here over the last couple of years between technology and research and people understanding, hey, dairy is good and it's good for you. We need those types of things to continue to happen.
Brian Yonkman is his name. He is in Chicago here at Rice Dairy. He grew up on a dairy farm in Michigan, as a matter of fact, so he knows the business very well and advises milk producers on what they ought to be doing to try to market their product. I tweeted a photograph of Ryan, as a matter of fact. He was in the studio with Orion and myself, as you heard there, and we took a picture, and I tweeted that. You can see what Ryan looks like, and the big O sitting there with his headset on as he was getting ready to go on WGN Radio at the time. Follow me on Twitter if you care to, at Max Armstrong. I'd appreciate that. There's more coming up on the Saturday Morning Show right after this. 7 minutes before 6 of the Saturday Morning Show. Mike Stephen comes along, and then, of course, Lou will be at Pheasant Run this morning. You'll hear him here while he's there. Big O and I talked with the president of the American Farm Bureau Federation this week about all of the stuff that has to take place in Washington yet. One of those things being the writing of the Farm Bill. And we asked Zippy Duvall, president of the American Farm Bureau, if he sees that work getting underway rather soon.
Well, I hope so. We've laid a lot of groundwork here at American Farm Bureau preparing for the discussion. We've got our policy in place at our national convention last month at Phoenix. And we're preparing for having that debate, and we're looking forward to it.
One of the questions I've been getting from our viewers is the crop insurance part of the Farm Bill, because urban newspapers have criticized it since it started. You think we're going to have any trouble?
Well, I think we're going to have a big debate about it, but, we've made crop insurance one of the foundations of this last Farm Bill, and I think it's going to continue into the next Farm Bill, and we've been encouraging our lawmakers to make sure that they continue to support that safety net, because it has performed well in a lot of areas, and of course in a lot of areas we've got to do some tweaking on it, but we still think it'll be the foundation of the next Farm Bill.
And what about trade agreements?
Well, you know, a lot of tough talk around trade agreements, talk about renegotiating NAFTA and pulling out of TPP, and farmers around the country are very concerned, because we know that TPP would have put $4.4 billion back in the farm economy. So since we've removed ourselves from that treaty, we're asking the administration, we want to work with you. We want to make sure that you understand the loss of the potential loss that we had in TPP when we withdrew, and we're interested in seeing what direction we're going to move in to replace that and even grow it larger. Our new president says he's for fair trade, and he wants everybody to be a winner, and I know he's including agriculture in that, and we're going to be there to work with him to make sure that that happens.
Zippy Duvall, farmer from Georgia. Maybe you could tell by the brogue there. He's president of the American Farm Bureau Federation. Well, the corn market rebounded. It's at the highest level in 7.5 months. Pretty good run up in corn yesterday to finish at the highest price since July. There was a little bit of inspiration for traders in that supply-demand report that came out of the USDA on Thursday. Soybeans and wheat also posted some pretty good gains yesterday. That March corn contract went up a nickel a bushel, 374.5 yesterday. December corn up 3.5. That put it at 399.25. March soybeans picked up 8.5 cents. That put them at $10.59. November beans up 4 at $10.30 a bushel. And the wheat market, yes, it came to life some. March wheat up 5.5 cents to 449. And the July wheat up 7.75 at 474.75. There was that report this week from the Chicago Federal Reserve Bank of a third consecutive annual decrease in the price of land. Yet that 1% decrease that we saw last year was smaller than the 3% declines for the previous 2 years. Looked like the biggest annual decline in the district served by the Chicago Fed was in East Central Illinois, down 5% from a year ago in farmland values there. Across central Iowa, the decline was of the magnitude of about 2 to 3%. We'll have a good opportunity to gauge farmer opinion, farmer attitudes this next week as we'll be at the Louisville Farm Show. That show starts Wednesday and runs through Saturday at the Kentucky Exposition Center. And once again this year, I'll be with Case IH. I'll be signing some hats. If you get there on Wednesday, I'll be there at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and then I'll be there again on Thursday morning at Case IH to sign hats. We're moderating a panel discussion, too, on Wednesday at 12 noon. I'll be involved in that with the Milwaukee-based Association of Equipment Manufacturers, and the subject will be infrastructure. I think you'll find it interesting if you have time to come by and join us for that panel discussion, because farmers have a lot at stake, of course, in good roads and navigable waterways that flow freely, because we have to move our product to market from the farms that way. An update of the news coming up next on WGN Radio.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.